3, 2, 1.
You ain't seen nothing yet. Hey guys, this is Chef Rich Rosendale. You know I always have a hunger for food, inspiration, and adventure. Well, this podcast is dedicated to our journey around the world, meeting interesting people, tasting delicious food, and experiencing new adventures around every corner. It's not just for chefs, but for food enthusiasts, entrepreneurs, and modern-day adventurous. Just because you're wondering doesn't mean you're lost. Let's dig in. Hey guys, how you doing? So this week we had the opportunity to do a webinar that was sponsored by What Chefs Wants. Those are some good friends of ours that are distributors, primarily in the Midwest. They're a great company. They took the initiative to do a webinar that I had the opportunity to moderate. And the topic was the coronavirus, the pandemic, and how it is impacting the entire community of hospitality, specifically as it relates to restaurants. I thought it was a great discussion. We had some great guests, and let's go ahead and hear what they had to say.
I'm going to go ahead and start off with introductions. I'll first give you my introduction. I'm Rich Rosendale. I'm located here today. I'm at our RC Culinary Lab right outside of Washington, D.C. This is essentially our R&D kitchen and catering kitchen. We also have Route 657 restaurant and market and our events division in Atlanta. Obviously, like all of you, all of those various businesses have been impacted in one way, shape, or form. In talking with Ian, I really tried to reach out and get a good kind of a variety of people from within the industry that can kind of offer their insight. I'll start off and introduce for everybody out there that's watching. We have Bobby Stuckey, who is the owner of Fresca Hospitality Group in Denver, Colorado. Thank you for joining us. Katie Button, who is the owner of Katie Button Restaurants in Asheville, North Carolina, who just recently joined us. Welcome, Katie. We also have Gerard Kraft, who I've known for several years through the Boku Store Foundation, Mentor Foundation. He is the owner of Niche Restaurant Group in St. Louis, Missouri, and of course, Nashville, Tennessee, who they've taken a big hit as well. In the restaurant industry in these last couple of weeks, like so many. And then we also have from What Chefs Wants, we have Ron Turnier, who is the CEO, also joined by Molly Turnier, who is the president of What Chefs Wants. And again, just to echo that for anybody that had missed, thank you both for setting this up. I think it's a huge resource. So to get started, we broke this down into a few questions. And I think we'll just kind of go around the bases here and kind of get everybody's insight on this. The first question is, how did your business handling the crisis? Like, what are you doing to handle the circumstances right now? We'll start off, Katie, if you'd like to start off.
Basically, when we hit a weekend where the conversation was not, you know, to avoid dining out in bars and restaurants. And obviously, and the whole country was starting to realize how serious this was. I mean, you know, New York had already kind of, and other areas had already been like in it, but I think the whole rest, I'm in Asheville, North Carolina, was starting to realize that. So, you know, diners were stopping to come in and sales were plummeting. And then we closed all of our places on that Monday, after that weekend, right before the governor made it mandatory. It was this on the 16th of March. And, you know, it's how we're dealing with this. We had to lay off all of our employees. I mean, my story is very similar to every other restaurant owner. The way that restaurants work is because we do operate on such small profit margins. It's great for communities because it means that there's like a lot of money flowing in and flowing out at every time. It's like a big wheel that keeps going. So you've got, you know, 100% of the money coming in and then 90% of it is going right back out or has already gone out, right? Like, you know, right. You're like paying you're paying yesterday's bills with tomorrow's diners. And, you know, it's like this wheel that operates. And in order to protect ourselves, you know, this is why all the restaurants ended up a lot of them who had to lay off all of their employees and then immediately stop any sort of bills. I mean, what we were doing was calling every subscription that we had to suspend services, reaching out to healthcare, insurance, our lenders. I mean, just looking for, you know, deferrals on loan payments. And I mean, it was really like financial, it's been like financial triage the past couple of weeks. And that's where we're at, sitting here.
It sounds like your group was pretty proactive though in reaching out to a lot of those different entities where there were opportunities. And you actually brought up a really good point. A lot of people don't realize that in restaurants, I mean, we're not selling Apple computers. I mean, the margins are pennies on a dollar, and you really just don't, people don't have that kind of cash flow just sitting around to be closed for multiple weeks. It's an incredible impact.
Yeah.
Bobby, if you would also comment.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of everyone's story is the same. What I think is the takeaway from this is I've spent my entire adult life and most of my adolescent life on a dining room floor. What I think caught all of us off guard, but the more you distill down on it, how fragile the situation is, you know, kind of to echo Katie's situation, in 1 week we went from March 8th, people were talking about it. I was actually at an event in New York that happened on March 8th to a week later, everything was shut down. One thing that came to my knowledge quickly and made it all more serious was I had hit send, or actually Alicia York, who works with us, hit send on our business interruption insurance. And I don't think there's ever been a reply from an insurance company quicker to decline a claim. And so as soon as that happened on that March 16th, I think was the day that we all closed, hit send, had that back, it made me realize how vulnerable we are. I said, wait a second, how can you have a decade and a half of premiums paid into your BII insurance? And these guys were so well tuned to say no. You can't come up with that overnight. The insurance companies must have known for months this was coming down the pipeline, said no. So that triggered me to, I actually reached out to two people. I was talking to Sarah and Phil, Sarah Abel and Phil Baltz, our PR firm. And then I reached out to a friend of mine, Harry Root in South Carolina, who had some very good success with the daunting task of talking to Washington, D.C. about the tariff bill in January. And I said, hey, where would someone even start? How is this possible that business interruption insurance is going to force all these independent restaurants to furlough their staff when I went into the weekend thinking I was protected by my insurance company? Long story has it, He connected me to the public strategist that he used for his tariff work. At the same time, Will Guidera, Marcus Samuelson, Tom Colicchio, and a lot of other great restaurateurs started talking, and we combined forces and started the IRC, Independent Restaurant Coalition. And really my job in the morning now is helping with IRC to get the right messaging to DC. And in closure, I know this is long-winded, but this is really important. The independent restaurants now, and look, I've spent my whole life in this and I did not understand this until 2 weeks ago. Independent restaurants make up more jobs in the private sector than any other private sector business.
That's right.
If you look at that package and you look at how much money went to some big, big industries that are dwarfed by these small independent restaurants. And we have never had a unified voice for us independent restaurants. That's what the IRC is doing. And we just got off a call literally 7 minutes before this one started. We were talking to Justin Peltier from the Congress. He works for them, one of the small business committee at Congress, helping to explain to him how fragile we are, but how much we mean. We came up with a term at Frosca from a peer of ours, Aaron Palmer. Think of it like biology. the independent restaurant is a cornerstone species. When you take that out of the system, it backs up and destroys the whole ecosystem. So I think moving forward, the United States should look at us as a cornerstone species in the ecosystem of our economy.
Bob, you brought up a couple really great points. One being insurance, and I'm sure you have probably seen that Thomas Keller has been trying to also lead an initiative with, he had obviously had his business interruption insurance, but he also had paid for a rider that he thought would be kind of like an umbrella policy that would have taken care of some kind of an interruption in his business. And of course that also has been denied. So he's in the process of fighting that. Another one is you mentioned the ecosystem. And when you think about, yes, all the people that restaurants employ, but also think of all of the farmers and, I mean, the people that bring you your linens and the people we buy our wine from and the vendors. And I mean, this is like layers of impact that the restaurant industry alone has had on so many other people. So,
well, Rich, I'll put it in context for you real quick. I'm just going to pick a major industry that thinks they have a lot of jobs. Okay. And I'm a fan of the airline industry. I love flying. I consult for American Airlines, but I'm going to use that as an example. The whole aviation industry, the entire aviation industry. And when they tally their numbers, they're throwing in the rental car people at the airport. They're throwing on anybody who's in aviation. That equates to 10 million jobs. Okay. That's a lot of people.
Right.
Now let's get to some brass tacks here. Independent restaurants make up 13 million jobs. Hello.
Right.
30% more than the entire aviation industry. And it gets the ecosystem piece comes into place. There's 10 million jobs that depend on independent restaurants. So that gives you an idea how big the ecosystem is. There's another 10 million jobs that need independent restaurants, not to only to be there, to be open, to be healthy, to be surviving. So Absolutely. That gives you a real picture of what we're dealing with.
All great points, Bobby. Thank you. And we're going to have Gerard Kraft also comment. Gerard?
Why do I have to speak after Bobby every time? No, I think exactly what Bobby said is that, you know, we are such a major industry and we're largely being ignored. You know, I was messaging some people this morning in Congress, and just it's kind of alarming how much, for instance, our representative Lacey Clay was patting himself on the back. I saved all of small business, and I'm sitting here like, you know, just barely getting through this legislation and getting through. I mean, once you can actually even understand what came through that bill, and then you understand how it's actually going to work, you really realize that it's really not going to do much for these small businesses, and especially a non-capitalized business. You know, trying to get through this SBA loan, if and when they actually get this loan, how little it's actually going to do for them because of the hoops that they have to jump through in order to get that money. You know, I mean, you're looking at keeping employees on for 4 months at 90% of your 90% of your current or last year's employment rate, which means you get 2 months of forgiveness for 4 to 5 months of keeping this staff on, when the fact of the matter is that in 3 months, despite what our White House keeps trying to say, we're not gonna be back to normal. And what normal looks like after this is still really up in the air for the next year and a half to 2 years. So, you know, again, to Bobby's point, you know, the cruise lines, who should be gone at this point anyway, and just for how poorly they're managed, are getting these big bailouts while small restaurants are just kind of being tossed to the side. And again, somebody from Lacey Clay's office was pretty much like, just go talk to your bank.
Right.
I was like, that's how little you actually know about the legislation that you are actually passing.
Well, and even with your restaurants, the damage is already done. It's like, you're not going to get that business back. You know, people are not working. And I think across America, you know, yet to get some kind of cash flow, you'll never get those days back, those weeks of revenue. And, you know, I mean, I almost kind of wonder, like, what does the next 5 years look like? I mean, it's absolutely going to have a longstanding impact, but some great points. And from a different perspective, just from a distribution with What Chefs Wants, would love to hear also Ron and Molly's feedback on this one as well.
Right. Well, that, very well said from all of you. I think we are in very similar straits and made many of the similar decisions. You know, this thing hit us square in the face. There may be some advantage that it did looking at coming out on this. You know, I've been around 23 years in this and have gone through 9/11, 2008, the great, you know, downturn in the economies. And I've always said, thank God we're feeding people. People keep eating. And I thought, you know, gosh, we've got things, you know, covered. What a great industry we're in. We barely went down, got through it, sailed through pretty well. And here we've had this macro event that smacked us in the face. And you know, it's hit us particularly hard. I think, you know, just to add on to what you guys have already said, one thing they're not factoring in as well is that we have perishable inventories. When you shutter our business, we're having to dump considerable amounts of inventory, which is going to take considerable amounts of cash to get started back on the other side. And that wasn't really addressed in our big industry. And I think that's something we wish could happen. You know, the only thing I might say about the PPL loans, who was that, Gerard? I think you've got to go for it, though. I think you've got to get in that program and get as much money as you can. We're encouraging all of our restaurants to do that. There are some problems with it. Certainly, if we have to spend that money during a time when we don't need the labor, we are just basically transferring what we paid probably for years and years in unemployment insurance, which is kind of doing its job right now. We're transferring it with this program if we have no industry to open up and make money off of that labor, right? So, you know, one strategy in that, or what's certainly been on our minds going through this is, boy, it would be great to get secured to have that money. There's a risk that it'll run out and the politicians may not refund it, or they may not refund it the same way with the same forgiveness, with the same interest rates. So our big dealings right now have been, we think, whether we like it or not, whether it's the best program or not, I think you've got to go get in that. You've got to get that free, get that income, get the employment income, get your rent, utilities, get as much as you can. And if hopefully when they recognize we can't really spend the money until our industry opens back up, they will shift that 8-week period, hopefully to some time within the overall framework. We're hoping that they will have seen that over that didn't work out very well, that that's not a really good program. And I would suggest get all that money you can and then just strategize what comes down the pike on how you best spend it and try to make it be better than nothing.
You know, just to comment on that, you know, we are definitely going to be going that route. But again, for, you know, the thing that people need to understand about small restaurants, you know, this is, you know, this could potentially look a whole lot like, so for a restaurant like us who actually ended up keeping everybody on payroll so far, you know, with these kind of hopes and dreams and, you know, talking to a lot of our senators and in their office that this was going to help. In the end, you know, there is going to be a larger debt load, even at a low interest rate. You know, debt is debt. And, you know, if you look at how, you know, student loans work, I think that's going to apply very much to small restaurants in the future. You know, the more debt you get saddled with, obviously, down the line, it's going to be harder to to pay all of that off. So I think for us, it makes a ton of sense, you know, but there's a lot of small restaurants that, you know, our payroll's $250,000 every 2 weeks, you know, it's not crazy in some people's, but, you know, think about how fast that adds up and how much debt you can rack up just by doing the right thing and not being open and keeping everybody safe and paying people. You know, it is just a tough way to start, whether it's our new reality or not. That's one thing, and I get it, but it's not the help that we deserve in this industry when the airlines are getting total bailouts.
Yeah.
Actually, if I could say one more thing real quick, we only intend to borrow what we know is can be forgiven, just as a strategy. But it is pretty low interest.
That's good advice.
More than that, there's loopholes too. There's not loopholes. There's hoops you have to jump through to get that, which means continuing with that same payroll after that fact for a certain amount of time in order for that money to actually be forgiven. And that money is not forgiven, if you will, because that's past that two and a half payroll mark.
Right.
What all are you finding with we kind of touched on payroll, but what are you finding with rent and are people working with you in what are you hearing? What do you recommend for people that are watching? Should they approach their landlords? What are you all seeing?
I can chime in. We're fortunate that, you know, some of our spaces, we own the building. So it's just been a conversation with our lenders, and actually you have to ask and you have to explain the situation that you're in, and don't accept the answer of, you know, oh, well, apply for the PPP and you can continue to pay. You know, it's like we all need to work together, and we can't blow our money in. We need to save as much capital as we possibly can. So, and I'm kind of approaching this PPP program actually more from the position of like, gosh, I need to not spend it all on payroll and get it forgiven. Right. I'm going to need this loan, whether that's, you know, like to last and make it through all of this. I will say that our, some of our office spaces, you know, we sent numerous emails to the management company and received responses from the ownership of the buildings. And they took a hard line at absolutely not, zero help, rent still due on this date, or we will charge you, you know, the interest that gets charged as you're late. I think people are seeing, and I posted that on my Instagram account because rubbed me the wrong way. And I got a lot of responses that people are seeing different kinds of things. A lot of property owners are working with people and are being like, they understand, they're being proactive. They see the long term, like they see the length of time, and they're like, gosh, we want to keep our tenants' businesses and our tenants successful so that we still have tenants, you know, like as this thing goes forward and we're all in this together. A lot of people have been feeling that way, but there are some people who are looking at this PPP program and saying, here's the CARES Act, use it, pay us. And what they're not understanding though is that it's not enough, you know, like it's first of all, the deadline of June 30th, which we talked about, is really soon. And we have to be reopening in the timeframe that we use that 8 weeks of loan forgiveness for it to make any sense. I mean, we're still applying for it, and I encourage everybody just to apply for it. But still, it's like, in order for it to make sense, you got to be reopening your restaurant with the expectation of people being able to dine out and wanting to dine out in that timeframe. And if that doesn't happen, then, you know, it's like you brought all your staff back and then you're not doing the revenue. I mean, you need revenue to be able to make it.
Katie, you brought up a really good point about, yes, trying to get that money, but also anticipating how much you're going to have to get out of that money.
Yes.
Because opening up a restaurant, it's not like just turning a light switch back on. I mean, there is a tremendous expense associated with, as Ron alluded to, about perishables and all that.
Yes.
I mean, just getting that engine primed again and staff and prep, I mean, it's basically like opening up a new restaurant, basically.
It's really expensive. Plus, you're sitting on the bills from the product that went bad, right, or that you had to give away when you shut down so quickly. So, like, you know, a lot of restaurants are dealing with needing to pay bills, taking out their lines of credit they had to pay over bills or to have a little bit of a cushion. And then, you know, in order to reopen, it is going to be very expensive. And I'm thinking, I actually, even though the requirement is for 100% loan forgiveness, is that you rehire the same number of full-time employees as you had last year, I'm not sure that that's the best strategy, because a right. restaurant can't operate with a high labor compared to revenue, right? It just can't. You just burn labor. I mean, because labor is so high in the restaurant industry, you just burn it really fast if you don't have the revenue that's coming in to cover it. So I actually think that you need to think about what you need and then think about, okay, well, I'll get, you know, proportionally. So if you rehire, I think this is what this means. If you rehire 75% of your staff, right, then you would get 75%, you know, loan forgiveness, right? Yeah. Like, it proportionally reduces based on how many FTEs you bring back on. And you have to do those calculations.
One thing that I think would be valuable for everybody out there would be, at some point, I mean, obviously, you know, we're talking about payroll and rent and how to kind of deal with the cash flow. But do you feel like, any of you, that there are some strategies or thinking about what reopening may look like? Are there differences to your menu concepts? Do you think there's more of a focus on the way you staff? Like, if you're a restaurateur that's sitting out there watching this, what do you see? What do you kind of see in your mind's eye as far as what reopening looks like? Bobby?
Yeah, well, a couple things. I think the first thing is, there are many people in our industry who have never been part of an opening team. And opening a restaurant, pardon my French, fucking sucks. your costs are higher than they normally are.
Yeah.
Most are higher. There are certain employees that just don't, they can be employees, they can be managers, they can be super industry veterans. Once they do their first opening of a restaurant, you see a lot of fallout. You see great industry veterans, once they do an opening, not make it 90 days for that new restaurant. It is really, really hard. Let's be very, very brutally honest. Everyone who's listening to this, everyone who's in the industry, let's say if you open, you have one restaurant and you reopen June 1, let's be really optimistic, it will be an opening. There will be people on your team who've never been through an opening. They might not have even known psychologically that they are signing up for an opening. It is really, really hard. It's really, really expensive. So in our case, we have 4 in-dining restaurants. It's going to be opening 4 restaurants. There will be fallout. There's nothing you can do. You're going to have team members that go, I did not even know this is what it's like. I mean, once you've opened a restaurant, it's a whole different deal than just going to work for another great restaurant that's been open a while. So I think this is something no one's talking about. It's really going to be painful. It's going to be really hard. It's also going to cost a lot more than you could ever imagine. So I really think people need to get, as soon as you put your teams back on payroll, you need to get to everyone from dishwasher to GM and let them know what they're getting involved with.
Well, and the more entities, the more properties that you have, it's duplicated. I mean, most people that have more than one restaurant didn't open them all in the same week. They've kind of added them on. So trying to trigger that all simultaneously is ambitious, even just trying to do one.
Yeah. And just everyone has to be really clear and really concise and really honest with the employees what they're signing up for, because it will catch people off guard. They'll be 1 week in and they'll be like, well, first of all, they're going to lose their muscle memory of being on a dining room floor or being on a line in a kitchen. There is a muscle memory that it's a different mojo. You're going to throw all that in at once. You'll see your food costs will be higher. Your labor is going to be higher. It'll be a really everyone should be really clear about that.
Gerard, I'm curious, a question for you. Do you see, as far as the whole reopening picture, whenever that may be, do you feel like there's any kind of like menu engineering, or, I mean, do you just turn things back on with the same menu that you close? I mean, for people that are out there, how are you thinking about that, what that world looks like?
I mean, quite frankly, I think that some of our restaurants work for whatever this new world of restaurants is, and some might not. You know, we do have a couple very, very small restaurants where all the seats are very, very close together. And I mean, we're not exactly sure that that really makes sense in that model for the next year or so. You know, I was actually hoping to hear kind of Bobby's thoughts on it, because I almost had a thought that a lot of fine dining places that are already a lot more spread out are almost more geared towards something like that. And whereas our pastaria has tons of space that we can at least, you know, pull some tables and distance people. But those smaller, tight restaurants may have to rethink who they are and how they serve people in more of a to-go type of fashion.
Wow, that's interesting. That's something I haven't really thought about, was just the proximity of the dining room. But that's actually that's a great point. And really, we're talking about the public's paradigm of dining out and how this crisis has changed that. So great feedback. Ron and Molly, any comments there on what for you guys, as far as from the, what does it take? We see it more from the restaurant operation standpoint, but what's involved from distributors, and do you see any issues with supply chain of any of the vendors? If we decided, hey, we got the green light to reopen, what does that look like on your side?
Okay, I think it's going to require a lot of communication. I think thinking about what you do reopen, how you reopen, we want to be prepared for that, because I think it is the great unknown. Does it come back, and is it going to be 50% occupancy? Are there going to be skittish people that don't want to get into restaurants for a while? You know, I do take somewhat of an optimistic approach that, you know, in the United States, we were feeding 50% of humanity. 50% of the meals were coming through food service. March 16th started a whole new world. And I think, you know, you guys are the elite, this panel especially is the elite of the elite. The expectations you guys have met through your entire restaurant careers have been very, very high. But I think you're going to find that there'll be a little bit lower expectations. People are really cooped up. They're tired of cooking and some of these things. And I think I wouldn't shoot really, really high. The last time we went through a disaster, 2008 was, you know, it was a downtime for sure. But after 9/11, the mood and the sentiment, it seemed that a lot of our fine dining went to more comfort food. And I think that might be some of the case here. I mean, you guys would know better, and we'll make those decisions quickly. But I think you said that pretty well, Gerard. But for us, you know, we're just going to try to listen to you guys. We're going to communicate as much as we can and just be ready for whatever the opening looks like. And it may, you know, we're in 8 states. It may be advantageous that it kind of opens up in phases. And when we open the first state, hopefully we'll learn from it and react quickly. I think there'll be a lot of that. But I think trying to, you know, Bobby, trying to get back to that level where you were and meeting those expectations, I think the public's going to be forgiving, if you will, to get through that profitably. Maybe not, if you get through it in increments to get back to where you were, I think you'll be forgiven for not being maybe excellent on day one or in the early going.
I'll just add something. I think the one thing that we've been thinking about is like revamping our menu, kind of not revamping it. I mean, like making it more efficient, like looking at each menu item and deciding which ones make sense, which ones are our winners, which ones don't, both on like a cost perspective and also just labor and feasibility. And then the other thing that we're doing is thinking of ways that we can diversify what we do. So if we are expecting our dining rooms to be a little slower until, you know, maybe until there's a vaccine, you know, maybe it's going to take that long for people to get really comfortable eating out and traveling. So in the meantime, maybe we can, we've been thinking about other ways that we can retail things or sell things online, or like what are our possibilities? And that way we can put some of our staff and team members, if we're not that busy in our spaces, into creating, developing these other lines of business for us. So that's kind of how we're approaching that.
Katie, do you think that there is any kind of a concern with a threshold of if they were to open up but minimize the capacity of restaurants? Now, granted, people may be reluctant for a little while to be around a lot of crowds, but if, you know, things gradually come back, I mean, is that a concern that it's like, well, at some point, you know, you need to hit a certain amount of guests each evening at a certain check average? Would that also be part of it?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably, that's the phases of grief that I think every single restaurant owner went through. Yeah. Was this realization of everything that you have built since you started. And now, you know, we've spent 9 years creating a culture, how we care for our employees, the benefits we offer. We created this wheel that was working. It was funding all of it. And it was great. And we were really excited. And now it's all been thrown in the garbage. I mean, we still have those ideas, but we're going back into this complete financial unknown. And it's scary and frustrating to have to start all of that again.
Anybody else want to comment? Any other comments? I think at some point here, we were also going to take some questions. We did have one more question. We kind of touched on it a little bit, and that was just in regards to the SBA loan. But I'll just go through it, and if there's anybody who wants to have more comments on it. But what role can the SBA loan and CARES Act have for your business and those in our industry? We kind of touched on some of that earlier, but are there any other comments or recommendations, strategies? I think that a lot of people, which is great, there's a lot of comments here. I think your feedback and how each of you are kind of dealing with this crisis is really insightful for people. But what would you tell people right now as far as, you know, where do you go to apply? Like what have you done and what would you recommend? And how can that play a role in them rebuilding and relaunching their restaurants? Bobby, you want to comment on that?
I think the first thing is see where your bank that you personally, your company banks with, where they stand on this. One thing we've noticed in the last 24 hours is some banks are saying, we're not going to participate. The margin's too low. There's not enough supervision. There's not enough guidance. So find out where your bank is. Be brutally honest. Are you going to put this online? Like, for example, I think as of this morning, Bank of America was one of the first major banks to work with its clients. A lot of other banks have said, hey, we're not ready yet. We're looking for guidance. Be brutally honest. Ask your banks. That's what we did this morning. Are you going to be able to participate on that? If not, you're going to have to go find another banker that's going to work with this. We don't have a roadmap for this journey. I do believe you need to try to get as much cash in the war chest as possible, A, for your employees, B, for the reality of opening. So apply for different loans to see if you can get them. I think those are really, really important. And also realize that I think the Congress and Senate realized that they got a lot done in a 2-week period. Now they're not in session. They've got time to start working on things. Hopefully they can retune this phase 3, and hopefully we can have a great phase 4. And that's where everyone on this call needs to be very, very comfortable with writing their congresspeople, writing their senators, writing their governors and saying, hey, this is where we are. Because right now they're not in session, but they're working on phase 4, and we have to be out in front of it this time around.
Good point. Gerard, comments on that?
I mean, to what Bobby just said, you know, I've had a lot of luck, you know, just via Twitter reaching out to these offices. And number one, this is a time not to be politically charged. In fact, you know, people not in my party actually have probably been more helpful than people in my party through this, which has been, you know, surprising. But, you know, I have noticed a difference in actual action by some of these people just through talking with their chiefs of staffs and their policy experts and things of that nature. So it really, really does matter. And if you have a voice on social media, you know, get them to call you. They will. I mean, it's been amazing. People will reach out. And again, some of them are more effective than others, but don't stop. You know, some of these offices I get texts from every day, and text back and forth about, you know, what we're seeing with this rolling out, how it's going to help people or not help people. And some of these people genuinely want to know, and they don't necessarily. These people are in the weeds too. And I think that's really important to remember, is that these, you know, all of their heads are spinning at the same time. And the staffers are the ones who are really getting the job done. So if you can influence those staffers, you know, you have a chance to really affect change in phase four and, you know, going forward. So, you know, don't be scared.
May I echo something, Drew? That was so spot on. I'll be really frank on the phone. I'm a Democrat. That's what I am. This is not a time for politics. And this is a shout out to both sides of the aisle. I've been surprised that I've got Republican senators and Republican Congress people really understanding the independent restaurant or the independent business and fighting for that a lot better than some people on the other side of the aisle. And we have to understand both sides of the aisle. This is not a time to use crisis for your political agenda. That should be no thank you. We need to be thinking about all these independent restaurants that need to have help. And Gerard said it perfectly, reach out to them. Our politician's job is not to understand every constituent's business, but it's amazing when you get one of them on the call and you explain the independent business, independent restaurant to them, it's like a light goes off. It doesn't matter if it's a staff member or if it's a senator themselves. They've been really accommodating, but we got to work with both sides of the aisle and we've got to really reach out.
And, you know, I also think that there's a tendency when something like this happens for people to get consumed in the story and to just to be watching TV or just watching their social media. And it could take you to a very negative place. But I do think that you really do need to have a sense of urgency of kind of being be aggressive in the pursuit of your own rescue and go out and expedite a lot of these lending opportunities and ask questions. And, you know, it's really easy to get just so consumed in what's happening out there that you completely lose momentum. And that's a very dangerous thing. I mean, I think at some point things will come back and it's really something that you want to try to be proactive and trying to use all the tools that are out there. And by the way, a lot of the regulations and a lot of the what was defined as unemployment compensation and all these different things, that some of those definitions have changed because of this crisis. So what you may have known as far as what you need to qualify for a loan, some of that has changed because of how the severity of this crisis. So I think everybody really needs to just kind of get involved, create dialogues with bankers, talk with your senators to have a voice. You really got to be proactive in participating in a positive way to evoke a lot of this change and not go to the other side where it can get very negative. And, you know, the reality is everybody is in the same boat, everybody across the country and really around the world. Anybody else have, Ron, Molly, anything else, any other additional comments there about the SBA and the CARES Act?
Well, I might have, I might ask a question back to the panelists. I think we've touched on it. Katie certainly did. You know, we're making a decision today. Do we submit it now and get the money before they run out of money? There's some talk that the $394 billion won't be enough. Ideally, and if we thought Congress would keep refunding it at whatever level the needs arise out there, that they're not picking first come, first serve winners, which they state they are. And so I think there's this risk that if we don't apply today, do we risk not getting anything? And we all know we would rather take the money June 1 or more towards the deadline of June 15th and let it be used when we actually have a business up and going. And so I just like to say that that's our big decision today. It's that risk assessment. Do we do it or not? And I tend to think they, there's no way they couldn't keep refunding it similarly, or you just all hell would break loose. But I think it's a low risk, but a high circumstance proposition.
We're applying for it now, you know, but I think we're hoping we're going to have an opportunity as we see that application go through to be able to pick our origination date on it. I will say though that it's my understanding that the 8-week period that you get to use the funds and have your origination date ends June 30th. So May 5th is like the latest origination date to take full advantage of the 8-week loan forgiveness. Now, I think a lot of people are asking for a technical correction to change that because June 30th is so soon and July 30th or August 30th, and honestly 12 weeks would be much better. So, and I think people are asking for things like that. So hopefully we'll see. What I'm hoping, I'm applying today, you know, like as soon as I can. And then I'm hoping that by the time, you know, I have to pick my origination date or with communications with our bank, we'll have some more information.
I was also going to say that I think it's really important to reach out not only to your politicians, but to the SBA directly with your comments so that they know what we're dealing with.
What about, let's see, if anybody doesn't have any additional comments, I think we have a few minutes left. We can take a few questions for the panel here. So let's see, we've got, anybody have any questions specific? Oh, where do you, Molly, one of them you just commented, but where do you apply? Do you know where, you mentioned the SBA and reaching out to them. Can you comment on where would one apply if they are interested?
Yeah, you can go to the SBA.com and fill out an application there. But the best way to go is to go directly to your bank that you bank with for your restaurant.
So actually those loans, typically you would go through your bank, but they are kind of guaranteed from the SBA. Got it. And actually looks like somebody just posted on the thread here, a link to where to go. I think you'll find too, with any kind of government agencies, we're finding that on the websites, pretty much everybody has a link that is coronavirus related. So typically a Google search, not too difficult to find.
One other thing I would say when you're on the internet researching these things, just watch out for scams. Make sure that you are on.
Great point.
The right site. No one should be asking you for your information without talking to them in person. And also, no one should be charging you anything to do this for you.
Great point. Can anybody say anything, that has been positive that over the last couple of weeks that, you know what, under these conditions, here's something that I found the opportunity to do this, or I started playing the guitar. Anything? What are some things that? Let's find some doses of things can happen in very uncertain ways and very mysterious ways. And you know, I've spent a lot of, as me, I can tell you personally, As a chef that travels a lot and has multiple concepts, I mean, sometimes day to day, you really just get caught up in the thick of thin things. And my wife and I, we've been together since seventh grade for a long, long time. And, you know, I always try to do my best to try to budget my time, but really kind of just spending time cooking with the family, cooking for my kids. That's been great. And really just trying to step back and just kind of reflect on life. And like I said, you sometimes you get to take all the negative and just run it through a strainer. And there's a lot of negative right now, but I think it's important for everybody to just also take into account your mental health and that you stay as positive as you can and try to, you know, take a step away from the news and all the anxiety that's kind of happened out there. I mean, the sun will come out again. And I think we just got to try to, I would say this is a great opportunity for all of us to work and look for ways to support each other. And because ultimately we're all in this together. And I also would extend that afterwards, anybody on the panel or any of our guests here, please feel free to reach out with any of the topics we've talked about. I know that everybody here on the panel feels the same way, but any good news from, we'll start with you, Katie. What else have you been doing other than all this other craziness?
Well, I have a couple of things that are good news work related too, but okay. And then I can also share something personal, but you know, I have to say that something interesting is I've never felt more connected with our employees and our whole team and company, before. We created like a private Facebook group and everybody's just like there and asking each other questions and sharing information. And then I send out a weekly email that's kind of a mix of things, both work-related, informational, helpful, and personal. And, you know, with like links for mental health things and resources and stuff. And we've just never been there and have been in that constant communication with each other before. And I haven't felt as connected with anybody. The other thing I will say that I am thinking is that we rarely get the chance to rethink our entire industry, you know, and when you get to reopen again, you do get to do it with the thoughts of what are our values? What do we care about? What do I hate about the restaurant industry? And what do I want to be different? And I've heard some people talking about with other restaurant owners, like, adding a couple percentage point administrative fee on guest checks with a story that explains what it goes to so they can offer health insurance or, you know, do some sort of carbon sequestering like offset or, you know, but coming up with some creative messaging about their values and what it means. And other people talking about forgetting the tip credit and sharing tips among their employees so that they can create a tighter knit team and not have the discrepancy between, you know, server a tipped wage workers and untipped. And so I think it's interesting to be in a moment where we get to really think about that before right. we dive back in.
Those are awesome points. Great ideas. Bobby, thoughts on that as well?
I echo Katie's point of how we can relook at our industry. Like, should we move forward, be an industry that means so much to the U.S. economy, but we work on such a small margin? Maybe we can, as an industry, rethink this. I mean, I do think it's interesting that, and I'm going to steal a line from my dad, who's not in the restaurant business, but when he says something, it's pretty spot on. He says, isn't it interesting that if you made 10% in fine dining, you're considered like a Hall of Famer, like a LeBron James.
Right.
If you're in another industry and you do 20% profit, you're fired as a CEO. So if we have an industry that makes up so many jobs, maybe we need to use this moment to get all of society to realize that maybe the cost of chicken needs to go up a little bit. Maybe your dinner does need to cost more, because we need to find a way, and we haven't found this yet, how we can cobble around some percentage points to an industry that means so much to the United States but lives on such a tiny margin. So that, echoing Katie's point, I hope we can find that way. And then personally, I've been a runner since I was 7 years old. So I've been running since 1976. I'm 50. And my whole family are avid runners. And a friend of mine, an importer, and I decided last week to try to do my first 100-mile week, to run 100 miles in a week. So I can't believe I've wanted to do that my whole adult life. It took until I was 50. So I ran 100 miles last week.
Wow.
As soon as I put it on social media, my little brother texted me. He's 48 years old, and he's like, dude, I'm doing that this week too.
That's so cool.
Now someone just reached out yesterday and said, hey, will you do that again next week so we can do it with you virtually? I go, I don't know if I have another back-to-back 100-mile week in me, but we'll see.
That's a busy couple weeks. Awesome, awesome. Both great comments. Gerard.
You know, I think that to Katie's point, I think just getting a minute to step back and actually think about your business and your industry as a whole and take some time when you're not in the thick of it, I think is huge. And to, you know, reimagine what food looks like and reimagine how dining looks like, as, you know, as daunting as that is, it's also, you know, a really interesting puzzle. And I think that's something that, you know, restaurant people kind of thrive on, you know, and I think I've also been, you know, knowing that this is going to take a little longer, setting my kitchen up a little bit better to, you know, maybe learn a little Indian cuisine and things that I've never really cooked before at home that I've always loved eating, but really just, you know, am completely ignorant to. So reaching out to friends who know a lot more and you know, learning a few more things. And then taking some time to get on my bike. So hopefully I can join Bobby and Lachlan out in Friuli when we're all allowed to travel again.
So. You're gonna love it, little Zocalon.
Can't wait.
Great, Gerard. Ron, Molly, your thoughts? Something positive coming from this?
Well, I think the most positive thing is, you know, Ron and I work together, so we see a lot of each other. But, you know, the kids, we've got two in college and one in high school, and they've all been apart from one another for several years now. So we finally are all together in a weird stage where you normally wouldn't be with your family. You know, college-age kids for so long, and it's been really nice to sit down as a family and have a meal and not be on a, you know, phone with them. So that's been really great. And I've gotten to know Ron, organized a really nice task force for the coronavirus, you know, team. And we meet every day at 1, and there's a different set of topics. And I've just gotten to see how talented and how hardworking people that we really work with are, which I know you guys see that a lot in your restaurants, but it's been really eye-opening and very touching. So.
Great. Well, the one thing
I've got one question that we've been grappling with as a group, and it came up as a Q&A, is what should we be asking our vendors, distributors, as we relaunch? You know, what can we be doing as a vendor to be a better partner for you, restaurateurs and operators, as we prepare to open? That's something that we've talked about, but. As a group internally, but we'd love to hear the feedback from you guys. What can we do to be better for you?
Katie, you want to take this one?
Sure. I think that, you know, we're all going to be going back. I think getting back to what Bobby was saying about us all being going back to an opening and what an opening is like. And that is, I mean, that does put strain not only on the restaurants, but also vendors and distributors, because when it's so unknown and things change, so allowing more frequent ordering, more frequent deliveries, like, you know, eliminating minimums, like, you know, because there's like, oh no, we didn't properly plan for this, we're selling this, like, you know, it's until it takes, I don't know, a month or something to like, or a few months even to like really get a groove. And it can happen fast, but I think just being there and maybe having some flexibility with everybody on that.
You know, I think also even just continued communication, just because right now there's a lot of misinformation out there. In essence, a lot of these layers of the crisis get created because of the general public's reaction to the news. I mean, why does the stock market go up and down? Well, it has a lot to do with the confidence of the people that have shares in the market. Why are people out there buying up toilet paper and all the paper goods? Well, it's basically people's confidence and reaction. They're stockpiling certain items. So I think that having those channels of communication strong and communicating with everybody about, hey, we're going to be online. We've got your lettuce. We've got your, that also goes from the restaurant's side, is to have proper planning and understand that, hey, whenever we do go back online, you guys have been really ramping down your inventory. And then when we decide we're going to be opening up, it's not going to be like, hey, we're opening up on Friday. You know, it's this big juggernaut of an ecosystem that's going to require, I think, patience from all of us and even to some degree the customer. But that goes right through the supply chain. I mean, we're dealing with perishable goods here. And I think that patience and communication at every sequence is going to be important in all of us relaunching.
And I didn't even think about this, but like typically openings happen and they're staggered, right? But the whole freaking country is
right,
trying to go back into business all at the same time.
Oh my
and
God,
it's
yeah.
going to be insane. So,
yeah. Well, unless anybody has any other comments, I mean, I just wanted to thank the entire panel, Bobby, Katie, Gerard, Ron, Molly, Ian there in the background and also coordinating all this. Thank you very much. I will tell you that I'm going to walk away from this. I'm very inspired, and this is kind of also a reminder of kind of why I got into the industry in the first place. It really has to do with a lot of the integrity and the drive of the people that work in it. And in some cases, we're going to be looking to reinvent ourselves. I know that you can look to each other to find support whenever you need it. And this only kind of makes me feel like there's strong solidarity with all of us in trying to get across the finish line whenever that comes. So, but thank you all very much, and thanks.